From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, October 5th, 2018. And on this day, Senator Susan Collins says she is voting yes on Judge Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court. We will look at her decision and the response to it. And we'll wrap up our series on the future of aquaculture in Maine with a look at some of the issues that can come up as the industry expands. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at MaineGardens.org.
In case you haven't heard, Maine Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins announced today that she will vote for U.S. Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. She announced her decision during a highly anticipated speech from the floor of the U.S. Senate, ending weeks of suspense about her decision and likely paving the way for Kavanaugh's lifetime confirmation to the High Court. Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler is here to talk about her vote. Steve, the suspense about Collins' decision has been building for weeks. Can we step back a little and explain why her vote is so important today?
Sure. It's part math and part politics, Nora. For one, Republicans have just a slim 51-49 majority in the Senate. And under the rules, Kavanaugh needs at least 51 votes to be confirmed. That means the GOP could lose one vote, and Vice President Mike Pence could break a 50-50 tie. If they lost two votes, his confirmation fails when the final vote happens on Saturday. So now the politics. As you know, Senator Collins has been under withering pressure to oppose Kavanaugh by progressive groups. She's one of a handful of centrist Republicans, and she's often been supported by some of the groups that fiercely opposed his confirmation. There are several reasons why those groups are concerned, but at the top of the list is the fact that his confirmation on the court is expected to tilt the balance of that court in favor of conservatives for a generation, at least. And that really frightens progressives, who are worried about cases that threaten a woman's right to an abortion could get a favorable decision if they reach the court. And the list goes on: challenges to environmental laws, labor rights, etc. Also, as you know, there's an investigation by the Department of Justice that could one day pose some serious trouble for President Trump, therefore requiring the court to solve an impasse over whether the president could be required to testify before a grand jury, for example. There are a number of people who worry that Kavanaugh's views of executive power could effectively allow the president to skirt such an inquiry. Of course, all of those issues have been eclipsed in recent weeks by the sexual assault allegations against Judge Kavanaugh. Now, I've always thought Senator Collins was leaning towards supporting Kavanaugh because she's been under a lot of pressure from conservatives to back him. But those allegations not only intensified the pressure campaign, but they really genuinely seem to trouble her. And I think that's one of the reasons why it took so long for her to make a decision.
So about that decision, what did Senator Collins say about how she got to yes on this?
Well, it was a pretty long explanation, and it didn't sound like she had recently made up her mind, to be honest. She began by decrying how the process had been sort of corrupted by politics.
We have come to the conclusion of a confirmation process that has become so dysfunctional, it looks more like a caricature of a gutter-level political campaign than a solemn occasion.
So she went from there to blast the interest groups that she said had been ginning up fears about Kavanaugh's judicial record. She then went on to defend his record and basically shoot down all of the concerns about his judicial record on environmental regulations and how he would address cases that involve, say, abortion. It wasn't until she got halfway through her speech that she addressed the sexual assault allegations by Christine Blasey Ford. She said she believed that Ford had suffered some sort of trauma as a result of an assault, but Collins also said that there was never enough evidence to corroborate Dr. Ford's allegations against Kavanaugh. And she said, without corroboration, the presumption of innocence is paramount.
If we abandon the presumption of innocence and fairness, tempting though it may be, we must always remember that it is when passions are most inflamed that fairness is most in jeopardy.
And then she went on to suggest that Ford had been victimized by those who sought to use her trauma to derail Kavanaugh's nomination. She highlighted the fact that Ford had originally wished to remain anonymous, but that somehow her identity had been leaked.
You have sacrificed her well-being in a misguided attempt to win whatever political crusade you think you are fighting.
Now, all these demonstrations we have been seeing at Collins' offices over the past several weeks, a lot of the people that we have interviewed promised reprisals, electoral consequences for Senator Collins. Is that going to happen?
Well, you know, I was originally very skeptical that the people who were promising to work to defeat her would follow through on that promise. For one, she's not up for re-election until 2020, and that's a really long ways away. Number two, we don't even know if she's going to run for re-election. But this confirmation vote has become so controversial, so partisan, and exposed such a cultural rift that I doubt anyone will forget it.
Steve Missler is Maine Public's chief political correspondent. Steve, thank you for your work on this, and thanks for talking with me today.
Happy to do it, Nora.
Even before Senator Collins announced how she would vote on the Kavanaugh confirmation, dozens of people were gathering in Lobsterman Square in downtown Portland across the street from her office.
Collins, keep your promise! Health care, you promised! Women's rights, you promised! Collins, keep your promise! Health care, you promised!
They have been protesting for weeks, often taking to bullhorns to share personal stories of sexual assault. Many wrote letters and made calls to Collins' office. They arranged impromptu sit-ins. And while Collins' decision came as no surprise, some protesters say it will encourage them to work harder to defeat the senator if she runs again. Susan Sharon has more.
They gathered in the square around laptops and cell phones to listen to Senator Collins offer her justification for Kavanaugh's confirmation, occasionally interrupting with their own commentary. After speaking for more than 45 minutes, Collins made her decision crystal clear.
Mr. President, I will vote to confirm.
Solange Kellerman of Portland said she was not surprised with the announcement, but disappointed that Collins never addressed what she says is a key point.
She went on for 55 minutes of civics lesson and a love fest, and she never once addressed that this is a hiring process, and she never talked about his rage. If someone walked into her office and had that kind of hysteria, she wouldn't offer that person a job. She would ask for a timeout and if they needed help.
We have $2 million pledged to the Democratic opponent, to Senator Collins.
Speaking to a crowd after Collins' speech, Marie Folitar of the group Mainers for Accountable Leadership said the vote on Kavanaugh is already being used to mobilize financial support for a Democrat to challenge Collins if she decides to run when she's up for re-election in 2020.
We tried to get Senator Collins to be a hero.
Gave her a chance.
She had her chance. So we're voting her out.
Yes. Yes.
Taking back our country.
Yes.
Hey, hey, vote, vote. Susan Collins has got to win. Hey, vote.
Folitar says Judge Kavanaugh may get confirmed this weekend, but the work of protesters is just beginning. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
This past week, we have been reporting on innovation in Maine's seafood farming industry. In the final segment of Aquaculture's Next Wave, we look at the conflicts that can arise as the growing sector's footprint expands, whether that's at sea or on dry land. Fred Bever has our story.
Can everybody hear me?
At a recent hearing in Kittery, so many people showed up to weigh in on the proposed expansion of an oyster growing operation in a local creek. Department of Marine Resources hearing officer Amanda Ellis had to make an announcement.
Based on the numbers that we're seeing, we've made the decision to postpone the hearing.
But opponents such as Mike Dowling were still plenty willing to talk.
Personally, I have many concerns. There's a whole group of us. They basically cut off the only section in Kittery where there's a sandy beach, which is identified.
Such complaints do arise with aquaculture enterprises among neighbors, sometimes including fishermen who worry about water access, environmental effects, and property values. Up the coast in McCoit Bay near Brunswick, a proposed 40-acre shellfish farm is meeting some stiff resistance. And then there's Belfast, where a proposal to site what would be one of the world's largest indoor salmon farms is stirring talk of the darker days when the city was dominated by chicken processors.
The harbor was basically one of the most disgusting bodies of water you can imagine, full of blood and feathers. All the effluent dumped directly out into the bay.
Ellie Daniels owns the Green Store in the heart of Belfast's lively downtown. Her home a few miles away abuts the 40-acre wooded site where Nordic Aqua Farms, a Norwegian company, wants to build its half-billion-dollar recirculating aquaculture system. Daniels is among many in Belfast who fear the city could be reindustrialized.
It's the scale of the thing. It's the fact that it's a large monoculture. It's only been theorized that it can work, that the technologies can work.
We just have different objectives in life, and that's fair.
Eric Heim is Nordic Aqua Farms' CEO. He says that in contrast to open-sea salmon pens, his indoor fish will need no antibiotics or pesticides to stay healthy. Skeptics say viral infections will still be an issue, and they are concerned about discharges to the bay as well. But Heim says that will be treated to reduce potentially harmful elements such as nitrogen and phosphorus.
That we don't want to see going into the bay. So I think in the end, you have a residual discharge that is just a small fraction of what you otherwise would have had.
And despite meeting as much as 7% of the nation's entire salmon demand, he adds, there'd be a max of about 10 trucks a day backing up to the farm's cargo bays.
So you can stuff a lot of fish into each of those tractor trailers.
One neighbor, Jeff Flimlin, who is building a retirement home next to the site, has a bit of a split perspective on the Nordic Aqua Farms project.
I told Eric if he ruined my night sky, I was going to be really ticked.
Flimlin says he can relate to concerns about compromising the serenity of the neighborhood, not to mention property values. But as a longtime educator in aquaculture at the Rutgers Cooperative Extension, he's also attuned to the idea that local seafood farms can have environmental benefits, too.
Why can't people understand that? They don't have to fly this stuff from the other side of the ocean to the United States, you know, and the carbon footprint that's going to be reduced. Yeah, there's going to be a building there, but think globally and plan locally, you know?
And there are projects around the state where locals focus more on the upside, such as jobs and investment. Just 20 miles up the coast from Belfast is the former mill town of Bucksport. Economic Development Director Richard Rotella boats past a closed paper mill whose smokestacks have long dominated Bucksport's skyline. He says the traditionally blue-collar town is welcoming a proposed industrial-scale indoor salmon farm, and demolition at the mill is now underway.
What will be remaining from what you can see here are the blue buildings and one stack.
Rotella says while many mill towns struggle to transform themselves to suit today's economic realities, Bucksport is already well on its way. And he says Whole Oceans, the Maine-based company behind the new salmon venture, has chosen a fitting site.
This area right here where we're driving by right now was the largest spawning area of Atlantic salmon at its time. So what Whole Oceans is looking to do for the property is to name the road One Salmon Way.
Still, when neighbors of a seafood farm do get activated, passions can run high amid complaints that the state tends to rubber stamp applications. But Patrick Kelleher, the commissioner of the Department of Marine Resources, which oversees most shellfish farms, says he is confident in the process and encourages public participation.
You put a farm in place, and then the farm starts working, and then the people who are opposed to it start interacting, and temper subsides. Relationships are built, and time heals all wounds.
Just yesterday, Kelleher's agency approved one aquaculture application in Penobscot Bay and turned down another in Scarborough's Spurwink River. He says that at the rate the sector is growing in Maine, he could use a couple more staffers to handle the caseload. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And you can find links to those decisions that Fred just mentioned, along with charts detailing growth in the sector, and other information at mainepublic.org/aquaculture. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, October 5th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.